Good afternoon. This is Carol Bond with the Decatur Herald and Review, dated November 10th, 2015. We'll begin today's reading with an article on the front page. The headline is, Korean Veteran Makes New/Old Friend, and this was written by Huey Freeman. In 1952, Norman Haubaker was serving in the Army during the Korean War near the demilitarized zone between the warring nations. The 23-year-old graduate of Macon High School was happy to discover that out of 12 men in his tent, two of them were also from the Decatur area. Haubaker was primarily a crane operator, assigned to the Headquarters and Service Company, 65th Engineer Battalion, with the storied Tropic Lightning Division. Our assignment was to do all the construction, to build roads, parapets for the artillery, and to clear off areas, said Haubaker of Long Creek during a recent interview. My crane was busy the whole time I was there. 63 years after Haubaker met up with the two other 63 years after Haubaker met up with the two other soldiers from Central Illinois in that distant land, George Mose of Decatur and Howard Taylor of rural Atwood, he wondered whatever happened to them. He contacted the Herald and Review in August in an effort to locate those veterans. One clue was discovered in the newspaper's archives. The first name of Mose, which Haubaker could not recall, a phone number was obtained, and the two were reunited. They met at Burger King in late October and talked over coffee for several hours. This has been a great deal for both of us, Haubaker said. Too bad Mr. Taylor couldn't be here. They were saddened to hear that Taylor died in 1990. According to his obituary, he died just 4 days short of his 66th birthday. A member of Atwood Christian Church, he worked at USI in Tuscola as a valve operator until he retired in 1986. It was ironic that Haubaker contacted the newspaper for help. Mose, who began working as a paperboy when he was 12 and subsequently worked 48 years in the Herald and Review mailroom and distribution center, still works as a contract driver, delivering some of the company's publications. Haubaker has a photograph of the three soldiers taken in front of the tent where they met. Mose, in the center, has his left arm draped over Taylor while leaning toward Haubaker at his right. A handmade sign on a post proclaims the tent is the Do Drop In. Below the tent's designated name, it proclaims that there is wine to be had and possibly women. It was wishful thinking, Haubaker, age 86, said, of the sign outside the squad-sized tent. There were not many women around. A similar photo, also taken with Haubaker's Polaroid camera during the same picture-taking session, was brought into the newspaper office by Haubaker's mother in 1952. It ran in the Decatur Daily Review, the evening precursor to the Herald and Review, on Monday, November 3, 1952. The caption reads, Three Decatur area men are serving together with an engineer's company of the 25th Infantry Division. From left to right, they are Private Norman Haubaker, who formerly farmed near Macon, George Mose and Howard Taylor, whose parents live near Atwood. Moses' mother cut out the photograph and sent it to her son in Korea. Mose still has that clipping in an album filled with service-related pictures. When Habaker reached Mose on the telephone more than six decades later, Mose was surprised to hear from him and could not specifically remember who he was. They met a lot of soldiers during their tours of duty, and they just shared a tent for about 2 weeks together. They were in the same army company, but a company normally has about 200 soldiers, and they always had different work assignments. Mose also had engineer training, but was mostly assigned to physical labor, such as cutting down trees with handsaws for bunkers and digging with a shovel on construction sites. One of his assignments was to help construct a prisoner of war camp. Another job was to search for mines with detectors beyond the front line at night. They had tripwires, and there were some underground, Mose recalled. One night we were out there was an explosion. A GI hit a mine. I didn't know who he was or if he survived. He said he enjoyed his time in the forests because everything was green in contrast to much of the region. Everything was barren by the front, Rose recalled. Mose was an assistant mailroom supervisor for the Herald and Review newspapers at the time he was drafted in 1951, 1 year after the start of the Korean War. A 21-year-old graduate of Decatur High School, he was shipped to Hawaii for 16 weeks of basic training, then to Japan for engineering training to become a combat construction specialist. He served about 1 year in Korea, receiving his discharge as a sergeant in 1953. When Habaker contacted the newspaper, he said he did not remember too much about the soldiers he bunked with, except that he enjoyed their company and that Mose lived on Cantrell Street. I would only be with them in the evenings to recreate with them, Habaker recalled. We talked mostly about what we were doing there. I was surprised we all three were from the Decatur area. It was a nice feeling having someone from your home. Mose said he did not remember much about meeting the other two soldiers, but recalled that it was bitter cold in that tent, especially at night. We had one heater in the middle, and I'd wake up with ice on my mouth, he recalled. By the time Habaker, who arrived in Korea in July 1952, was assigned to the area known as the Punch Bowl, the other two men were already there. The camp was surrounded by a ring of mountains about 3,000 feet high. The enemy would sometimes shell with artillery. We could see their encampments, Habaker recalled. We could see where our bombers were bombing them and dropping napalm. One hill was called Million Dollar Hill. It was all white. We had dropped so much ordnance on it. One of the highlights of Habaker's tour was when he visited with his younger brother, Lynn, then 21, who was stationed about 50 miles away, serving in the Army Signal Corps. He got there about the time I was leaving, about April of 53, Habaker said. My lieutenant commander loaned me a Jeep and driver to visit with him. Lynn Habaker died in 2004. During his tour of duty, Sergeant Norman Habaker was stationed in the countryside, enduring harsh weather conditions, including bitter cold during the winter. You deal with it, Habaker recalled. I think it was 10 to 15 below at the coldest. Most of the equipment was prepared for it. Altogether, Habaker spent 10 months in Korea, mostly operating a crane in several locations. One of his assignments was building protective shelters for artillery pieces by piling up dirt mounds and then covering them with timbers, dirt, and gravel. That gave them adequate protection, Habaker said. If they zoomed in on us, that would take a direct hit. As a reward for his efforts, the artillerymen allowed him to shoot off the big guns. They'd say, Habaker, pull this lanyard. So I'd pull that rope. I wondered if I killed anybody. After Habaker returned home after the war, he didn't think much about trying to get together with his comrades from the punch bowl. You get busy. It goes to the back of your mind, he said. I didn't think of getting together with any of my buddies from Korea until 3 or 4 years ago. That's when one of his friends, with whom he spent a good deal of time in Korea, called him. He lives southwest of Centralia. We had 3 or 4 nice visits, Habaker said, adding they were in the same company during the war and spent a lot of time together. Habaker recently celebrated his 60th anniversary with his wife, Joyce. Shortly after their wedding, he was hired at Caterpillar Incorporated, where he worked for 30 years, retiring in 1985 as a top-grade precision machinist. His wife recently took out his photo album, and he saw the picture of himself with Mose and Taylor, which began his quest to find them. They have struck up a friendship that they are both enjoying as much as when they first met as young men, far away from home. It's always good to have a new friend, Mose said. The photographs described in this article do accompany the article, including an updated photo of the two men standing before a United States flag. In a news article of local interest, we have this headline, Water Meter Project Nears Completion. This was written by Allison Petty. A push to upgrade Decatur water meters is nearly 98% complete, with several hundred residents facing monthly fees after neglecting to schedule a meter replacement. Corex Utilities began the process of replacing more than 30,000 water meters in February of 2014 as part of a larger energy performance contract between the city and Johnson Controls. The newer models transmit data to the city remotely, and officials say they are more accurate and could provide earlier leak detection. In March, the city notified about 10,000 residents who had not set an appointment to replace their meters that they would face a $35 monthly charge meant to cover the cost of sending someone to read the old meter. The intent is not to have customers pay $35 for us to read. The intent is to get everything on this new reading system, Water Services Manager Randy Miller said. It really helps. The measure drove many residents to respond. Miller said Corex has about 650 meters left to replace, and about 480 of those represent people who have not scheduled an appointment and are being assessed the fee. The city has attempted to contact these residents in multiple ways, Miller said, and would continue to do so until Corex completes its work, likely within the next few months. We were hoping that we would finish up a little sooner, but we just kept getting orders, Miller said. We weren't hitting the numbers that we wanted. They've stuck around probably just a little bit longer than what we originally anticipated. The meter project is the largest part of efficiency upgrades expected to save the city $23 million over time. Savings are guaranteed through the energy performance contract with Johnson Controls, for which Corix is a subcontractor. To make an appointment for a new water meter, call Corix Utilities at 1-855-734-9618 or the city's Water Services Division at 217-875-5705. With Veterans Day coming up tomorrow, we have this headline. Vets to receive business benefits, and this was written by Ryan Voiles, Dateline Decatur. Businesses across Central Illinois will take an extra step on Veterans Day to thank those who served this country. With the holiday falling on a Wednesday, some businesses are doing a single day of special deals, while others will extend theirs until the end of the year. Downtown Cafe in Decatur will provide free breakfast for veterans on Wednesday from 6:30 to 10 a.m. The breakfast is a partnership between Eagle Ridge and the Downtown Cafe. Texas Roadhouse in Forsyth will offer veterans, both active, retired, or former U.S. military personnel, the choice of 10 entrees, including a 6-ounce sirloin and two made-from-scratch sides, plus a choice of any Coca-Cola product, and sweet tea, iced tea, or coffee during lunch hours. Proof of service is required, which includes military or VA card or discharge papers. O'Charlie's Restaurant and Bar in Forsyth will continue to offer veterans a free pie on Wednesday, with a choice of signature pies such as double crust peach, southern pecan, French silk, country apple, and ooey gooey caramel. For those who want to look stylish, Great Clips in Decatur will offer veterans a free haircut from November 11th through the end of the year. Customers who come in Wednesday can get a free haircut card to give to a veteran, redeemable through the end of the year. McDonald's throughout Central Illinois will have its second Buy One, Give One McCafe Coffee for Our Military initiative. Through November 15th, McDonald's will match every cup of coffee sold and send a cup to an active and veteran military member. The McCafe Coffee will be sent in the form of fresh coffee grounds. In news of crime and courts, we find this headline: Man accused of burglarizing Decatur motel. This article was written by Huey Freeman. Nathan McClure, a 28-year-old Decatur man, released from jail in March after serving time for a burglary charge, is being held on $25,000 bond for burglarizing a motel a few days after he was hired to paint it. At about 4:35 p.m. Friday, October 30th, officers were sent to Soy City Motel, 1828 East El Dorado Street, to investigate a burglary. The owner showed officers surveillance video footage, which captured the movements of McClure as he entered and left the motel's basement and office, said an affidavit by Decatur Patrol officer Alex Amaya. The owner told police that McClure was supposed to be painting a room 27 that day. Quote, "I observed Nathan walk out of room 27 and walk to the stairwell leading to the basement of the property and lay his painting pail and roller down on one of the treads," unquote, Amaya wrote, adding he saw McClure try to open an office door and a basement door. Then the surveillance video showed McClure using a tool to break into the basement. "Nathan can be seen going in and out of the basement multiple times," the statement said. After about 10 minutes in the basement, he emerges, looks around for a few moments, then crouches down near the door handle of the motel office, after apparently defeating the lock with a tool, he gains entry. McClure is seen as he jumps over a counter, opens a cabinet where the cash drawer is kept, and another quote, "selects items from the cash drawer and conceals them in his pockets," end quote. He then leaves the property on foot. In addition to recognition by the motel owner, officers identified him as the same individual pictured in a digital jail mugshot. In his prior case, McClure pleaded guilty March 6th to one count of burglary for breaking into a residential garage on the 2000 block of East Prairie Avenue and trying to steal auto parts and copper pipes. The 49-year-old male victim, who reported several recent burglaries to the same garage, interrupted McClure and a male accomplice during the act at about 4:30 p.m. August 1, 2014. McClure was identified by DNA left on a cigarette butt and sandal left at the scene. He received a sentence of 90 days in jail and 24 months probation. As a result of his most recent crime, he is facing additional sentencing for a probation violation. He is due in court in that case November 23rd. McClure, who has five other criminal convictions in cases including forgery, battery, and resisting a police officer, is due in court for his arraignment in the motel case by Friday. There's a public service announcement about Veterans Day closings. Federal, state, county, and city offices and Richland Community College will be closed Wednesday, November 11th in observance of Veterans Day. There will be no mail delivery and no window service at the downtown post office or Memorial Station on Mound Road. The Decatur Public Library will also be closed Wednesday. Decatur Public Transit System buses, however, will be running. Next, we have an article related to adult education at Richmond Community College. And this headline is "Scars to Prove It. Richland Chef Stresses Knife Skills." And this was written by Valerie Wells. Even an accomplished chef occasionally cuts himself. "I did this last week," Chef Brian Tucker told students in the hospitality class at the Adult Education and Training Center on Monday, indicating a recent injury. "This scar is from culinary school." Tucker, head of the Culinary Arts Institute at Richland Community College, was invited to give a presentation on knife skills to students at the center and to talk to them about a career in culinary arts. A 2-year program, such as the one offered at Richland, is standard in the industry, he said. A 4-year program is more focused on management than cooking. And the thing about culinary arts is it's always in demand. No matter where you go, everyone's got to eat, Tucker said. The first thing students learn in culinary school is knife skills, Tucker said, and students are required to purchase a professional knife set. He showed the adult education students his knives, explaining the construction and different uses of each one and why good knives are so critical to a chef. It's like a carpenter's hammer or screwdriver, Tucker said. Knives are a chef's tools. A good chef's knife can cost upwards of $100, he said. And in response to a reaction from his audience, he explained that the chef's knife, for example, is the most used knife in his kit. He is still using the knives he bought for culinary school, and he graduated 16 years ago. With the move to the former Decatur Area Technical Academy, the adult education program's hospitality class can become more of a culinary arts program, said instructor Lynette Mensa. One student is already in an on-site work experience program at Keystone Meadows, and another will begin next week working under supervision. That student, Kasheshna Graves, said she learned to cook with her grandmother and is looking forward to large-scale cooking experience. Adult education is all about bridging, Mensa said, and the hope is that they can guide students into Richland and other professional training programs that will lead to employment and self-sufficiency. Tucker is going to serve as an advisor on our board, she said. What we would like to have happen is for him to give us ideas on curriculum. Plus, this is something we hope to do next year, once we get funded, is have the speakers come in with this kind of thing, hands-on activities. Photograph shows Brian Tucker, who is cutting a pepper while presenting his knife skills demonstration for the class. I count 16 different kinds of knives on his demonstration table. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the November 10th issue of the Decatur Herald and Review. Please stay tuned.